Coming up on this week's episode of Check Your Balances, do you actually feel rich? We're going to explore that question and a few other ideas. Stick around. It's coming up next.
Check Your Balances is a show produced and owned by Kraftwerk Capital. The views expressed by the hosts and their guests are personal opinions and should not be considered personal financial advice or the opinion of Kraftwerk Capital. All investments have risk and may lose money. Consult with your financial advisor, tax preparer, or attorney prior to implementing anything discussed, and please do not use this show as the sole basis for financial decisions.
Welcome back to another week of Check Your Balances. I am Ross Anderson, joined as always by my friend and co-host, Dan Maseka. Dan, you're the one with the beard on the podcast cover. I think people think that we are mixed up and backwards. We've gotten emails of people that say, why is Dan's voice coming out of Ross's mouth when I finally get to the YouTube channel? People have been very confused about who we are. I think it's because you're first on the podcast cover, but you're the one with the beard.
Yeah, I guess if people engage with us only in the audio medium, why would you know who's who?
I wonder how often that's happened, because we have had folks come through the podcast and ultimately book appointments with us. Mm-hmm. Like go to the Kraftwerk Capital website or whatever. I wonder if they end up in an appointment and they're like, who the hell is this guy? I thought I was talking to the other one.
Yeah, I bet that's true.
I think that happens a lot. So we had a guest scheduled that we were going to record earlier today. They are not feeling well. We're unable to do the show. And so we're coming into this week's show with like zero plan.
Like even more zero than usual.
Yeah, sometimes, I mean, yeah, we're goofballs. Sometimes we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants on this show, and that's okay. This is a worse version of that than it normally is. Maybe the worst version of it we've ever had in terms of where we're at for our preparation right now.
Yeah, I mean, to pull back the curtain, you literally said, if you're willing to take a risk, I'm going to hit record and we'll see where it goes. And that's basically how I live my life. So I'm all about it.
Correct. A quarter mile at a time, Dan. Mile at a time. So here's why I wanted to just hit record, because I wanted to ask you a question and I wanted your genuine, unprepared response. Like we're just having a conversation in our normal morning stand-up meetings, or, you know, I call you constantly. I'm sure you're tired of me calling you. But we talk on the phone all the time. But I just wanted a take actually on our show of how we might have this conversation and how ridiculous some of the questions I ask you are.
Okay.
Is your experience that people at almost any level of wealth that we've worked with don't feel rich? Do you know a single person that would say, I feel wealthy or I feel rich in terms of how I'm living day to day?
No. The answer is no.
That's a wild answer. I would also say no. That's a wild answer.
Yeah.
Why doesn't anybody feel like they've got that freedom, whatever that means to them? Like you and I were having a discussion yesterday and you bought a guitar. You want to tell our listeners that care about guitars what you bought?
Sure. I bought a knockoff Gibson Les Paul. I saw it. It looked beautiful. A gold top on Craigslist. I'm like, I don't need this guitar, but they lived basically in my neighborhood and I'm going to ping them about it. The dude was so fed up with scammers emailing him that when I sounded normal, he just like negotiated himself down to a point where it was so cheap for me. I'm like, well, if this plays nicely, I'm just going to buy it. So for $200, I got a beautiful knockoff Gibson Les Paul. I played it at a band practice last night. It's great. I got a hard shell case and he gave me a monitor for free for no reason.
I mean, the case alone is probably worth at least $50, right?
Yeah. The case alone, $50. The monitor, $50. You know,
so you basically got a $100 guitar and you like it.
I'm going to play it all the time.
Yeah. Love that for you. Love that journey. But we were talking and I basically said, if money was no object, what would you buy? What would you go get as a guitar? And you're like, well, if I want $1 million, I would go get.
Yeah. This, Gibson ES-335.
That. Okay. And then I was expecting you to tell me that's like a $50,000, $60,000 guitar. Cause I asked you how much those are. You said like $4,000.
Yeah.
That's a ridiculous thing for you to tell me, that you would have to win $1 million to go out and splurge on a $4,000 guitar. I think I would splurge on like a $4,000 item if I won like $5,000 unexpected dollars. I would go do it immediately. If I could even cover it or justify it, maybe I would only have to win $3,000 and be like, wow, this is only going to cost me $1,000. What a deal.
Yeah, I'm going to treat myself with $1,000, and this other three was gifted from God.
If you could get that guitar for $1,000, would you go do it?
Today, probably not today.
No. Okay. Interesting. No.
I think that's like, so part of it is there's no reason I need another guitar. I didn't even need the one I got, truthfully. Like, you need, well, nobody needs as many guitars as most people have. There's also something nice about having this thing that's like you haven't attained yet. It's like, this is a luxury item for me. Like, if I have it, it's like I don't have like anything to work for or drive for. I think that's true for a lot of things. I think that's why financial plans are so good. It's like, what am I working towards? And if you achieve it, it's about finding the next thing and your next purpose.
But I think that point is exactly why nobody feels wealthy, right?
That's true.
Is we keep moving the goalposts. The same things that you have today, the version of you that existed 10 years ago, probably couldn't even imagine. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I think about where we are in our business and like, if you had told me 5 years ago that you and I would be sitting here together, that we would run our own shop together, we would have a podcast that we've done 166 episodes that we've put into the world on a weekly basis, good, bad, or ugly, that we just keep putting them out there and seeing who wants to listen. Like, I don't know that I would have believed that. And then, yeah, you're doing it and you go, yeah, okay, I still got to get through the day, right? There's some thing about looking into the future and just wanting whatever's next that I think it's tough to appreciate how far we may have come.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's healthy probably to never feel too comfortable. Like, you always have to have something driving you and motivating you. And if that's gone, I feel like that's why you often see a lot of people who retire and then like deteriorate pretty quickly unless they find the next thing to fulfill them. It's like, if you're just retired and sitting at home trying to synthesize something every day from nothing, it's very hard to do. So, right. You know, maybe it's human nature.
Living every day like a Saturday, it's tough. Because Saturdays are fun. They are wonderful. But when every day is a Saturday, you spend a lot of money or you just do nothing, right? The key is to retire to something.
Right.
I think about this a lot because when I think about the types of questions that we answer for people, things like how much house can I afford or how much car can I afford? Or like, you know, Morgan Housel has talked about that if you get the big things wrong, right? If you overbuy on the house, there's almost no amount of cost cutting that's going to make you feel better, right? There's no number of lattes that you cannot drink that is going to make having some massive mortgage payment that you can't make or huge rent payment or huge car payment.
Right.
You just can't get around that if you've made the biggest mistakes.
Right.
I wonder if that's part of it, but I also think that there's this like badge of honor around not having to keep track of your expenses.
For sure.
And I think that's where a lot of the creep comes in.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Like, when you ask people that have made good money, what do you spend on groceries? They're like, how would I know? If I need groceries, I get them, right? Like, there's a level of freedom, and I kind of operate like that. I get it. I operate like that, and then I look back and I go, well, what did I spend?
Mm-hmm.
And I force myself to reckon with it, which right. I think is the part that's missing. A lot of people won't go back and look. But that's a badge of honor for a lot of people to not have to budget. I've worked hard. I don't have to budget. That's for people that don't have enough.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a great feeling to have if you've checked all the boxes. Like, that's a great way to live. It's like, I've done the hard work. I don't need to look at how much a pound of chicken costs now because it doesn't matter. I can get the pound of chicken. That's fine.
But I think that works as long as your savings plan is calibrated.
Right. For sure.
That's the key. Is if you're doing that, if you're living that way and you haven't thought about your savings, you're just never going to have any money.
And so when you asked me about people who feel they've have enough, or was that the question? I think so.
I think lots of people feel like they have enough. I think specifically, like the moment that's in my head, and this happens.
Oh, feel wealthy, I guess.
Yeah, this happens a lot. But when we go through building a financial plan for somebody, and you kind of finish getting all the assets in order, all the big things, you've got a listing of their home, their major liabilities, their retirement accounts, their cash, and you pull up that net worth statement for the first time, the number of people that might see a seven-figure number and realize that their net worth is more than $1 million and go, yeah, I didn't think this is what a millionaire felt like.
Right.
There's something in their head. And I guess that's what I was really picking at with the question is what's that thing where people that are objectively doing fabulous, it doesn't feel that loose to them. They don't, there's something where they're going, I still feel restricted. I don't feel like I've got, again, it's not, I don't think it's a lack of contentment or feeling like I don't have enough, but there's some like finite resource that they still feel like is constricted in a way. I think somebody that went, yeah, no, I'm rich. I don't have to worry about stuff like that. I don't know that I've ever spoken to anybody that talks about their money that way.
Yeah. Well, humans are animals, right? I think there is some innate thing in our being that we can't reckon with that. Like we humans live an incredibly privileged life on this planet, which is unnatural. Like we have built a society that allows us all these freedoms.
We're too far up in Maslow's hierarchy of needs, is what you're telling me.
I think to some extent that's true.
Yeah.
Like our animal instinct doesn't want us to feel content because that's when you get eaten. So it's probably this drive that like you can't rest on your laurels. You have to keep going. Like you have work to do because otherwise the faster animal in the back is going to catch you. So just be careful.
I think you might be right. So it's tax season. Shout out to our folks that work in tax. You're almost through it. Just a few days left of your rush. They're also not listening to this show because of what they go through on an annual basis. I had this thought the other day because it's so crazy to me how busy the tax folks are. I mean, first of all, I like between the end of March and now, I've probably had six people ask me, do you know a good CPA?
Yeah, when?
Yes, but if you call them right now, they're going to murder you. Like they will be upset. I can no longer refer anybody to the good CPAs I know right now at this point in the season, unless you're just going to file an extension and you are already aware of that. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. Can you help me file an extension? We're going to move on. But I was trying to think, could there be another system? What if we broke it up by like last name?
Oh, and you filed like throughout the year, depending on when your letter was called?
Correct. Yeah. Like what if it was A through, you know, G or whatever? I don't know what the...
Like the draft for tax filing?
Correct. Yeah. And if you are these letters, you're going to file on the first 3 months of the year. So you're going to file by April 1st. If you are, or quarterly or whatever, you know, but like, what if we created multiple deadlines for when people had to file their taxes so that it wasn't just this mad rush of like one category, one group of people with this specialized knowledge that have to kill themselves every single year to get all this stuff done. And people like me, and granted, I'm doing my own taxes, but I'm a disaster every year. I work to the deadline. I have not filed yet. I will not file. Probably until after this is aired. When you're listening to this on the 10th of April, I think is when this show is going to air, I will not have filed my taxes yet. There's no question about it.
Yeah. I think that certainly solves a problem because you're right. It's like 3.5 months at the beginning of the year where everyone is mad rushing to get their stuff done. It's like a very condensed time frame for everyone in America, unless you're filing an extension, and every entity in America on top of that.
Yeah.
The obvious hurdle is reporting from like employers and institutions for the people on that schedule. And God forbid you should change your last name or something like that. Then your reporting is all messed up. But I like the idea. Taxes are all self-reported anyway. It's like honor system. Like right. I'll throw a return in there and let's figure it out later if you have a problem with it.
It's not like the IRS is reading them all on the day you file it.
No.
During COVID, I had to amend a return. I had forgotten. I had done like a small Roth conversion that year and I forgot to report the Roth conversion. And I remembered it like the day after I filed. And I was just like, oh, unbelievable. And when you file the amendment, you have to send a paper return. That's super annoying, by the way. So I file an electronic return one day. Tomorrow, it's like, oh, no, I messed it up. I have to file a new one. So I send them the paper return with a check. They sat on it, and I realized it was COVID, so a lot of people weren't going into the office and whatever. Everybody had these stay-at-home orders. I probably sent it in April 17th, and I don't think they cashed the check until October. Literally, that return sat in a pile in the mailroom, unobserved. Because the first thing they're going to do is cash your check.
Right. Yeah.
That's how long it took, I think, for them to open the piece of paper that I sent them.
That's crazy. That would give me anxiety, just having that check. I'm sure it gave you anxiety too.
Well, yeah, you just know it's out there. And nobody balances a checkbook anymore because we don't have to. Maybe I'm sure somebody does.
But to our earlier discussion.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but people don't balance a checkbook because most of these transactions are electronic. That's not even a budgeting thing. That's just like a how our money works.
Right.
Is that most people don't have 6 outstanding checks that they've written at the grocery store and all these retailers and wherever they do their shopping, where they have just haven't reconciled money they've spent. It all happens super quick.
So similarly, I had to amend a return last year. I think it was November that I sent it in, sent the return, sent the check, check cashed immediately. 3 days ago, I get a big fat check from the US Treasury in the mail. I'm like, what is this? It says 2020.
That's why you're out buying guitars, huh?
Yeah, I wish. So at first I'm like, did we mess something up? You know, I had to amend 2 years returns, maybe the second year because of the first year changed and I got a refund. We figured it out. That is not true. They just haven't processed my return for like 5 months. Like you said, first thing they did is cash the check. That came out immediately. And now what I believe I have to do is take this check, cash it, and write them a new check immediately and send it so they can match it with the return that I sent in, or like send this check back somehow. All of it makes me very uncomfortable because, you know, it's like a black box over there.
Yeah. So are you going to make a payment like and apply it? So you basically think that they cashed your check. Then they compared your old return and they were like, we owe this guy money. They sent it back to you because some human or machine hasn't read the updated return that you sent in to say, hey, I made a mistake. I know I owe you money. Here it is.
I believe that's what happened. So they cashed the check. They didn't process that amended return to like match it to yet. So they said, here, this guy sent us too much money. That's apparently a problem. Here it is, sir. Yeah. Like, so I'm sitting on a check that's not my money. It's their money because that's how it works in America. And I need to get it back to them. And now it's like my liability again, even though I thought I could check that box. Real great. First world problems.
What a system we've got here.
What a system. We were like planning our summer vacation. We're like, look at this windfall of money.
Yeah. I mean, in theory, you owe them that money. If they sent it back to you by mistake and then they find that later, I bet they still charge you interest on the underpayment, don't they?
Why wouldn't they?
That's what's going to happen. They're going to go, well, this guy didn't pay us enough. Here's the interest for underpaying your taxes.
Yeah, for sure. It's like the whole reason I had to file the amendment was because of a federal program that my brewery was eligible for. And it took them years to pay out for like COVID relief. Once they did, that's taxable income, by the way, that applied to prior year's returns, which you're the fund beneficiary of as well. We had to all amend our K-1s, all amend our personal returns, or at least that's what you should have done.
The recommended path.
Right, the recommended path. And so it's like, and then all interest penalties as well for underpayment as a result. And it's like, well, this originated with you, Uncle Sam, and now we are paying the price for that slowness. Like, you'd think they would just waive it or something, or just make life easier for people.
You know, it's funny because it's in so many ways a broken system, And in other ways, it's amazing it works as well as it does.
For sure. For right? sure.
Like that, both of those things are true simultaneously. You're both looking at it going, look at this ridiculous thing and how broken it is. And it really is. It is particularly difficult for business owners. Like the tax right. system, the tilt in the tax system and the favorability in the tax system towards businesses, you could look at that and say that that's unfair. Or you could look at that and say that that is perfectly fair compensation for how hard it is to run a business, for how much extra stuff you have to put up with to be in business of any kind. That's the penalty, right? Like you can't start a little Etsy shop. If you're whatever you make on your own, if you want to put them on the internet and sell a few of them, you are now in business. You didn't want to be in business. You wanted to run an Etsy shop. You wanted to make bread right. baskets.
You're creative. You're an artist. Like
that's not, you didn't get into this because you wanted to do taxes.
Yeah.
Like it's an unbelievable system we have that like you are penalized for being entrepreneurial in the form of having to do all this stuff. And then we give you a few tax breaks for having gone through the effort.
You are speaking directly to my brother right now, who is an artist and has like particularly hard times navigating all this nonsense as someone who's just trying to sell a few paintings.
Yeah. Just trying to pay a few bills, make a thing, see if somebody's into it. And then you're like, whoa, well, yeah. now you're filing quarterly payments. You underpaid for the year. Good luck, buddy. You're done.
Right. Yeah. Like, forget about all the state requirements, too. Like, good night.
This is what me and Dan talk about. This is literally what a Ross and Dan conversation. Yeah. I'm normally in my car going somewhere. I'll be driving to the gym or something. Have the weirdest financial planning thought. And I call Dan. And we talk just like this.
Right. It's one of us at, like proposing some insane idea to the other. Like,
tell me why this is dumb.
Yeah. Dan, what do you know about the hills of West Virginia? what does the night sky look like out there? Would you rent it for a night if you were going on a romantic cabin getaway?
Yeah. What do you think people would pay for a night out there?
Yeah. How much do you think it costs to run electricity out into the middle of nowhere? Could we Airbnb that?
That was a legitimate idea we had. We were looking at a piece of land out in like Shenandoah. Yeah. And I was like, well, what if we put tiny houses on it?
And we were closer to doing it than not, I think, is yeah, what's the best part.
I mean, look, it wasn't like a nothing burger of a value. I think the land was like 30 grand.
Right.
Which, yeah, is real money. Like I didn't want to just mess around and accidentally lose us 30 grand. But I did go through the process of, I was like, what if I've been thinking about rentals all wrong, right? That's really the idea I was having is that, because to me, when I look at, I'm in the home market, right? We just talked about this. When I look at these homes, they wouldn't rent for what it would cost me to pay for them. Even if I'm putting 20% down, like the math just doesn't work mm-hmm. unless you own it outright or you bought it 20 years ago or whatever. And then at that point, your value of selling it, I think, ends up being higher than what the rental income is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
So for like a low income venture that doesn't extract enough value from the home, and I have to deal with the headaches of being a landlord, that's why I pass on most of this stuff. But my thought was, well, what if the problem with this equation is just that we're putting too much money into it? So what we need is a low purchase hurdle. Let's go get a tiny house for 50 grand. On a piece of land that's worth like 30. And then it turned out that land was like two plots. So we could have actually done two of them.
Yeah.
So we're all in for 130 grand. And I was like, what could we get? And then immediately it was like, oh yeah, well, you're going to have to drag power. Right. And you don't know how much that costs until you, first of all, like contract with the actual utility.
Yep.
In that location. It's not standardized. It's not like one place does it for $1 million and the other place does it for like it's completely random on what county you're in, what city you're in, and what they're willing to do it for. I was like, well, how can I do a projection of that? I just have to put in some wild number. And it immediately got out of hand. We didn't do it.
One day we'll do something crazy like that again.
We've had some crazy ideas.
Yeah, I'll reserve some of them and not put them on the airwaves because those might happen.
So we might still do a couple things.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we're always thinking. For as much as we're sitting here complaining about the headaches of being in business and being a business owner, almost every day we have another thought about another business.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say. Our phone calls are one of two things. Either that, which is crazy to me when you frame it that way, is like as much of a headache as everything is, we are still willing to jump both feet in to the next
thing. We're already doing it. It's not going to get worse. I mean, maybe it will, but yeah, it's like, well, I already deal with this hassle. I'm at least conditioned for it.
Yeah. Or our phone calls are just complaining, which is one of my favorite pastimes. So dreaming or complaining, and often one is a result of the other.
You know what I appreciate about you, Dan, is a lot of people will have the dreaming conversation and never do it. And while I think we have way more of these conversations than people would even believe, even as we're talking about it, because we are constantly doing this to each other.
Yes.
When it is a good idea, we do act on it. We're sitting here for a reason.
Yep, that's true. I tell all my clients who have like crazy ideas, I'm like, I'm the guy you want to talk to, because if I think we can make it work, I'm going to push you until we've fully fleshed it out.
Yeah. And sometimes the crazy idea, the numbers don't make sense, but I love a crazy idea.
Me too.
I love figuring out if it's actually crazy.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah.
I hope this wasn't our worst episode. I don't think it was.
I'm going to make a bold claim. This was far from our worst episode.
If you made it to this point and you've got thoughts on any of our ramblings, we'd love to hear from you. Check your
balance. Do not email us and tell us which our worst episode was, because I don't want to hear that.
I have to check the emails, so you can tell us that.
Okay, you can tell Ross that.
I won't ever say it out loud, but I think I still know what our worst episode was, but it's fine.
Well, we have one episode that never made it to air, but that wasn't because of us.
No, that was a technical problem.
I mean, it was a technical problem and a guest problem.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a couple things there. I forgot about that. You're right. We did scrap one and two.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the worst one probably didn't make it.
Right. We're but very generous.
Over a guests. Times. That's not a problem.
Right. That's true. We have done some retakes. I remember sitting in your living room, like doing 10 shots for one of our earliest episodes, and for some reason it wouldn't work.
Yeah, we're good at it. And I still don't know if we're good at it, but I at least feel more comfortable doing it, or I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable being uncomfortable.
Right. Yeah.
Anyway, we'd love to hear from you. Check your balances at outlook.com is the email address for the show. If you've got topic ideas, things you want us to weigh in on, questions about your personal finance stuff, we're just a couple of certified financial planners trying to help people through this thing. We appreciate you tuning in. Thanks, everybody. Have a good rest of your week.